and welcome to the Richard Hunter interview. As ever, this is a place where I'll be discussing matters of interest with a whole range of investment experts. In this episode, I'm pleased to be joined by Peter Sacker, manager of the Artemis Smart GARP Global Equity Fund. Peter has managed Artemis's global growth strategy and an institutional global fund since January 2004. He has also co-managed the European Growth Strategy since 2002 and the Global Emerging Market Strategy since its launch in April 2015. He joined Artemis in December 2002 from Merrill Lynch, where he worked as an equity strategist from 1999. Peter holds a BA in Mathematics and Philosophy from the University of Oxford, an MA in Economics from Freiburg University, and a PhD in Economics from Hamburg University. He is a CFA charterholder, a partner in Artemis, and a member of the Executive Committee. So firstly, a very warm welcome to you, Peter, and thank you for sparing us some of your time.
Thank you, Richard.
If we could perhaps start at the beginning, could you talk us through the objectives and the strategy of the Artemis Smart GARP Global Equity Fund, and indeed remind us of the meaning of Smart GARP?
Absolutely. Well, the fund's objective is quite simply to grow shareholders' capital and income over the medium to long term by investing in global equities. But what's perhaps different for us is that we, in searching for these opportunities to grow the capital, we cast the net out very wide, choosing from an investable universe of about 7,000 companies from about 50 countries, whether it be developed markets, emerging economies, or even frontier markets. Any sector of the stock market is fair game. And of course, we also choose from the entire market cap spectrum, large caps, mid caps, and small caps.
And in terms of the meaning of Smart GARP?
Yes. Well, if you start with such a huge investable universe like we do, you have to use something to narrow the field down so that with our limited attention, we have time to investigate those cases where there appears to be evidence that share prices and fundamentals have diverged. And that's basically where Smart GARP comes in. It's a quantitative stock screening tool that has evolved over the last 20 plus years, and it pulls in more than 100 data points for all the companies in the universe and highlights those companies where there appears to be a disconnect between share prices and fundamentals. And then our job as the fund managers is then to go out and do a bit of due diligence to verify that there's a real life investment story behind the seemingly attractive investment opportunity. So the key advantages, in my opinion, of using Smart GARP to cover this big universe is that it's disciplined and unemotional, that it provides very timely signals, and also that it sort of constantly checks whether the reasons for which we've made our existing investments are still holding true today.
Yes, and absolutely. And the GARP part, therefore, stands for this sort of growth at a reasonable price.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Smart GARP technically is an acronym. It's sentiment, momentum, analyst revisions, accruals, top-down growth at a reasonable price. These are seven of the eight factors that feature in Smart GARP today. The eighth one is explicit ESG factor that we couldn't quite squeeze into this acronym as we have it today.
Understood. So what are the current geographical and sector weightings of the fund?
Well, today the fund is very heavily underweight US equities and very heavy offsetting overweights in Europe and emerging markets. The reasons for this is not so much my personal view of the relative merits of the US economy versus Europe, but rather it goes back to Smart GARP again. The way we decide on our regional allocations is that we compare the proportion of Smart GARP's best ideas within a certain region with the weight of that region in our global benchmark. So for instance, at the moment, North American equities make up about 64% of the MSCI All Country World Index, our benchmark, yet they only make up about 20% of Smart GARP's best ideas. And that's why we're underweight there. And of course, conversely, by contrast, in Europe and in emerging markets especially, these markets are overrepresented among Smart GARP's best ideas. I'd like to once stress one point here, which goes a bit back to what you were saying at the beginning. I've been managing this fund since the beginning of 2004, and I've been doing this asset allocation like this ever since then. And in all these years, the proportion of best ideas that Smart GARP has found in the US has never been as low as it is today. And I find that quite fascinating. And it would be tempting to think that the only reason SmartCorp doesn't like the US is because the valuations are rich. But that's not actually true. I mean, it is true that these valuations are quite stretched there. But, you know, it's still possible to find reasonably valued companies in the US. And in fact, there are plenty of companies in the US that are fully valued, but are justifying their full valuations. The reason SmartCorp is, if you want, disenchanted with US equities at the moment, is that actually both in terms of analyst estimate revisions on aggregate and in terms of price momentum on aggregate, US equities are scoring only averagely or even slightly below par. And that in combination with rich valuations, that is not a recipe for making money. Again, to stress, there are some companies that have got strong earnings momentum and strong price momentum, but they tend to be in the mega cap and the high growth space. But what SmartCorp is picking up is that if you look over the wide universe of US equities that we are screening today, we're actually finding relatively few ideas.
Sure. And in terms of actual sector breakdowns, how does that fall into place?
At the moment, we are overweight financials and especially banks and insurance companies. And the other material overweights we have are in energy and in basic materials. And again, it's tempting to say, oh, maybe we are just buying these because they're cheap. But that's not what SmartCorp is designed to do. As you were saying earlier, SmartCorp is a GARP process. It looks for companies that are, it's growth at a reasonable price, that are cheaply valued for the growth that they're expected to deliver. And, you know, at times, SmartCorp will push us in the direction of high growth companies that are fairly valued only. And, you know, that's where the opportunities are. And today we find much more in the camp that are very cheaply valued, but are growing as fast or only slightly faster than the market. And when you look at the financials or the resource sector, those all fall into this camp. But what I would stress is that we invest in those companies not just because they're cheap, but also because there is a catalyst to convert this undervalued situation into a higher share price. And that very often is positive trends in analyst estimates.
Okay, so you very clearly and concisely described the kind of things that you're looking out for in specific stocks going through the SmartCorp kind of filter. I wonder, is dividend or dividend yield something that comes into your calculations or is it pretty much growth focused?
It's an interesting one. So dividend yield is one of the components within the value part of the SmartCorp screen. And so we tend to have, on average, over the entire cycle, a slightly positive bias towards dividend yield. At the moment, the dividend yield is at its highest it's ever been since in the almost 18 years that I've been managing the fund. But that's just a reflection of where SmartCorp has found the most attractive investment opportunities. So yes, there is a decided yield tilt in the fund as we speak today.
So to put some color onto that, Peter, could you perhaps talk us through one or two of your top holdings at the moment?
Yeah, I mention a couple, maybe some that are more familiar and some that are less familiar. If I start with one that's probably less familiar to listeners, we have a significant investment in a Chinese renewable company called Longyuan Power. You know, if you read the papers today in the context of COP26, you may be surprised to hear me tout China of all places as a place to find environmentally friendly investments. But I think this turns out to be a serious misunderstanding. And that's not just because China has officially stated that they want to be, you know, net zero by 2060 and that they have a long-term plan to decarbonize the economy. But I think more importantly, because if you are a company in that space in China, you have the benefit that you can really make very long-term plans because you don't have to worry about there being a policy reversal of the type we've seen in the West and especially in the US not so long ago. So Longyuan Power is one of the beneficiaries. It generates about 75% of its revenues from wind farms, and solar is making up an increasing share of its revenues as well. I think we've all seen the latest headlines of China's continued reliance on coal and, you know, and the problems that has caused the country. So it seems to me that Longyuan has a very long way and a very long time to grow its top line. And we can make an investment in a company like this at 17 times earnings, which is a little cheaper than the market average, but not particularly richly valued. But I think that's an attractive investment opportunity given how long this growth may last. So we believe this growth isn't fully reflected in the share price. I'd say I'd mention also a name that's maybe much more familiar. I mean, we do also own shares in Alphabet, valued at 26 times earnings. So clearly trades at somewhat of a premium to the broader market. But in our view, you know, that is justified partly by the continued stellar growth across its many business units, but also by its outstanding cash generation. And we've just seen that the other day when they reported their Q results. But I thought maybe I'll finish off with something much more controversial as an investment than these two, which is a Chinese bank. So the fund owns a couple of Chinese banks. One of them is Bank of Communications. It's the sixth largest bank in China. And it's basically valued today as if it's going to go bust in the very near-term future. And we're talking here about not 26 times like for Google, but 3.5 times earnings. It still sports a dividend yield, as we were talking earlier, of almost 10%. And that dividend is even forecast to grow by 5% or so in the next few years. Now, the reason it's trading on these very low valuations, in my opinion, is that investor sentiment has swung against it, partly because of the US-China tensions, geopolitical tensions. It's also true that the government holds a stake in the company and at times exerts influence on the management. And of course, there's a lot of fear. Thirdly, there's also a lot of fear about China at the moment surrounding banks' exposure to a very large real estate development company, Evergrande, which might have a big impact on the loan book and on non-performing loans going through the roof. But what I find interesting is that when you actually dig into the detail and do the research on the company, what you find is that this is not really showing up in the financial characteristics of the company. So they just reported very recently the latest results, and it suggested that asset quality is actually improving rather than deteriorating. And the suggestion is that its return on equity, which is at the moment at a healthy level of about 10%, might actually rise from here. And at that valuation point, in our opinion, the risk reward is heavily skewed to our favor.
An interesting choice. Now, obviously, the last 18 months has been somewhat extraordinary. I'm sure your smart guard filter has really been put to the test as well. So how have you found that the fund has performed over that sort of period?
Well, the fund had a difficult first 9 months of 2020, followed then by a very strong recovery since. You know, over the last 2 to 3 years, SmartGarp gradually has been encouraging us to take profits in our high growth holdings and to redeploy the capital more at the cheaply valued part of the market. And that was a slight headwind in 2019, but then became a significant headwind initially then during the pandemic, during the first lockdown, and then in the initial stages of coming out of the out of lockdown, you know, because in those days it was the growthier names that kept outperforming very, very sharply. But what we've then found is that since the announcement of the efficacy of several COVID-19 vaccines, the fund's fortunes have changed dramatically, and suddenly what was a significant headwind in the first 9 months of 2020 has been a tailwind since then. And so yes, the fund has been enjoying a healthy recovery since then.
And finally, Peter, obviously at any given time, markets have to climb a wall of worry. You mentioned the tensions in terms of the US-China relationship, which aren't being so widely reported today, but clearly are still there. Then we've got concerns around inflation, tapering by the Fed in the States, and the potential for rising interest rates. How do you find that you're positioned at the moment, and what's your outlook from here?
Right. I should perhaps state at the outset that I never make forecasts about the direction of the overall market. But what I would add is that from where I'm sitting, the present investment environment does present, in spite of, you know, many markets having made new all-time highs lately, really an unusually large number of interesting investment opportunities. So I had it earlier, we see many of these more at the value end of the market, especially, but not exclusively, in Europe and in emerging markets. I touched on banks and insurance and also energy and basic materials. But again, my perception is, you know, there's been a big gap that has opened up in certain segments of the market between the fundamentals, which are very resilient, and where the share prices are trading. And if that gap closes, there is significant alpha to be generated, whichever direction the market is going into. So at the moment, the fund on aggregate is very cheaply valued, but it is delivering higher growth than the market average. And in my experience, that's been a a good recipe for future returns in the past, and I'm very hopeful that it will prove so again this time around.
And always good to end on a positive note. Many thanks again for your time, Peter, and for those valuable insights. That's Peter Sacker, manager of the Artemis Smart Gulp Global Equity Fund. And thank you for listening. Please feel free to like and subscribe. And of course, you can find much more, by the way, of investment insight and ideas at ii.co.uk. I'll be back next Tuesday with another Richard Hunter interview. Bye for now.